This is John Johnson. I'm still in Dundee, still at the e-assessment conference at the university. It's Friday the 23rd of August, and I've been joined by David Noble, or my usual co-host, I suppose, on EduTalk, and by Derek Jones from the Open University. Derek?
Yep, that's correct.
And can you maybe just give us a wee bit of background on yourself? Because you haven't got a Milton Keynes accent at the moment.
I don't actually have a Milton Keynes accent. It's a Milton Keynes accent, actually.
It's probably a smorgasbord of...
Yeah, I can do the accent, but it contains a swear word, so I better not. I'm a lecturer in design with the Open University. I'm the course chair for U101 Design Thinking, which is the university's level one course on design and innovation. So obviously that gives us a really unique challenge in terms of how do you actually allow students to learn design at a distance, because the traditional paradigm would obviously be in a design studio in a physical co-located space. So that was one of the attractions of, taking the position, because I'm actually an architect, believe it or not, to trade. I've actually only recently become a full-time academic. So it's been an experience over the past couple of months. It's been good.
Just a couple of months?
A couple of months, yeah. I was part-time with the Open University before, and I've been tutoring with the Open University on this module since it started about 3 years ago, and decided to take the plunge and move to academia full-time recently, so, yeah.
And you've been, well, you're sort of coming home here to Dundee.
More or less, yeah, absolutely. Yep, I trained here, obviously, went to Duncan of Jordanson. Yep, so it's good to be back, yes.
Yeah. And have you been to the assessment conferences before?
I have indeed, yep, I went last year. I mean, it was a great wee event last year. You know, you go to a lot of conferences as an academic, you know, sometimes international level, sometimes really local conferences. This is a really nice wee mix, if you like, of just different people standing up and saying, look, I've done this thing here. I think it's quite interesting, right up to sort of big corporations presenting their software. It's just a really, really nice mix. And of course, the people all really, really care. That's a really good thing.
Yeah, I think you get the impression just listening to everybody that I've heard talk is this idea of they just want to, for learners to have a good time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to succeed, but enjoy themselves at the same time, which is not what I expected the first time I came to an assessment conference.
Yeah, absolutely.
That quite a lot of people have, I'd say, have sort of sketched around assessment or been looking at it in a slightly different way.
Absolutely.
Or in some cases talked about things that weren't even maybe all that accessible. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of the second keynote today. We'll talk to Helen Keegan hopefully later on, but that kind of blew my mind, I think.
No, absolutely. I would completely concur with that. And, you know, I have a lot of sympathy with Helen's position on that. You know, you have to ask yourself, what is the point of assessment? Why do we actually go about that and why do we do it? And, you know, it's a constant tension. There's no doubt about it. At the Open University as well, we have to at some point say that a student has capably demonstrated a whole bunch of stuff. So, in effect, you're kind of measuring, but are you actually measuring the experience that they've had? You know, what's going on under the bonnet? What's going on in their heads to lead to that? What you hope is a transformation. And I think Helen's point there was that assessment is absolutely fine for what it is. But you need to start with the experience. You need to start with what it is that a student's going through. That's the thing that we all aim for. No, I suppose a classic example would be, as a teacher, why you do this is for that moment when you see the penny drop. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You can see it in the student's eyes. That's what you live for. That's what you're doing it for. Okay? That's irrelevant whether or not they can tick a box that says 2 plus 2 equals 4. It's that moment that matters.
Yeah. Sorry, David.
Yeah, I was just going to ask Derek about the assessment kind of procedures within the course. I'm just having a look at the page online.
Look at my session. Hi.
We're just going to have a slight pause here. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. We are now live, so this will be recorded as well as going out live, and we'll put it out as a podcast later. That's me back again, folks. This is John Johnson at Radio EduTalk. It's Friday the 23rd of August, and it's about 3:15 at the moment. And I'm continuing the conversation we started a wee while ago with Derek Jones from the Open University, and we've now just been joined by Helen Keegan, and David Noble's here as well. Helen just gave, I think, the most mind-blowing keynote I've heard for a long time, really dicing with some kind of really interesting ethical, moral experiences and stuff like that. It's just fascinating. It was quite a sort of trip you've taken your students on, so we'll get into that in a wee while. Could you maybe just tell us where you're from, Helen, where you've come from, what you're excited about?
I'm based at the University of Salford. I'm a senior lecturer and researcher there, and I'm also a National Teaching Fellow 2012 for the UK Higher Education Academy. So I've been at Salford about 15 years now, and I guess the things that really excite me are curriculum innovation and really kind of pushing the boundaries. And I like to think of modules and courses as experiences. So I'm very kind of influenced by transmedia practices, and I look at the kind of excitement and energy and motivation around fans and fandom and franchises. And you think, well, how can we bring that into the classroom? How can we really get our learners, take them on a journey and give them transformative experiences? So, yeah, getting people to think outside the box, move outside the comfort zones.
Yeah, and we'll get to this later, but I think we certainly did, didn't you? And Derek, could you maybe just introduce yourself again for the people listening to this segment
sure.
of the show?
Okay, I'm Derek Jones. I'm a lecturer in design with the Open University. I'm also the course chair for U101 Design Thinking, which is the university's level one design and innovation course. That's quite an innovative sort of blend of different digital technologies and social media technologies, where we have a huge group of students working in a sort of large studio environment. Obviously gives us a brilliant challenge in terms of not being physically located in the same place, so how we replicate some of those social interactions. Some of the stuff that you were talking about, Helen, that just immediately rings a bell with some of the things we try to do or try to introduce in a much softer way at this stage. Yeah, absolutely. It's experience that matters.
Yeah.
So, about 20 odd years ago, I started teaching in the primary school, mm-hmm. and my first supply job was, I think, a primary one in a school in Maryhill, and I picked up the topic mm-hmm. of the day for that class, mm-hmm. which was, I can't remember exactly, it was about a cat. And the idea was that you brought this stuffed cat into your classroom. Yeah. You prepped the children first, you said, we're getting a cat.
Yeah.
And you did this whole sort of set of lies, really, yeah. about this cat that was coming in, and the cat came in, and it was always sitting up on the high, and it had adventures, and it disappeared, yeah. and the children bought into this thing. Yeah. And that was quite good fun, and yeah. later on in my primary career, I think I did the same sort of thing with broken robots and the like. And what you described in your keynote today was like that to the infinity and beyond. Maybe could you explain to our listeners in a sort of elevator pitch
yeah.
of the programme. I don't even know what you'd call it.
Okay, the long and short of it is that I've been going increasingly frustrated with the assessment-driven culture in UK higher education, and the fact that increasingly year on year, the higher the fees the students are paying, the more they become like consumers and expected to. And I'm sort of bemoaning the loss of the love of learning, I guess. And it's really interesting that you talk about primary education, because I think we've actually got a lot to learn in HE from earlier schooling.
Yep.
It's ironic, isn't it, that we kind of almost test mm-hmm. curiosity yep. out of our learners. And again, that's something that I think is particularly bad in the UK under the current government, Michael Gove, with his need for standardised testing at every available opportunity. Mm-hmm. And if you think about curiosity, curiosity is incredibly important. It's curiosity that drives us to discover, to explore, and it leads us to great things. And we're born so naturally curious, aren't we? And then I guess there are kind of physiological changes which we can't help, and they're there for good reasons, but things that develop in the lobes of the brain that stop us taking risks, and that's good because it stops us falling off things and dying. But alongside that, we also have kind of curiosity beaten out of us, in a sense, through this, the system of standardised testing and standardised education. So, yeah, what I did was I wanted to see how far my learners would go beyond assessment if they were made deeply, deeply curious. And so I introduced mystery and intrigue into the curriculum to get them to consume all sorts of content that they were being assessed on. And I wanted them to have a very transformative experience. So I ran an entire module as an alternate reality game, so basically a parallel universe that, unbeknown to them, they entered into alongside the module. And yeah, we had quite an adventure together.
So you haven't really got the hub of this was this character, yeah. Rufy
Franzen.
Rufy, yeah. Franzen, and who is Rufy Franzen really?
Yeah, I mean, Rufy Franzen doesn't exist. Okay, what we did was I worked with a friend of mine, and we basically developed this narrative that was going to drive the learners into discovering all of this content that they weren't being assessed on, but that we thought would be really good for them to kind of consume. And Rufy was our device, you know, within which to get them into this so good game experience. So Rufy was a character that we invented, and we developed Rufy's identity online over a period of months, over lots of different social platforms, as a way to engage learners in different social platforms, as a way for them to kind of look critically at content, you know, lots of different... there's amazing video resources on the web, mm-hmm. for instance. But if I want my students to sit down and watch 48 hours worth of videos around digital cultures and they're not being assessed, they're not going to do it. So in order to get them interested, we did things like place subliminal messages in places and, yeah, that kind of thing. It went on for about 11 weeks, this game.
And they were sucked into this by this character, yeah. Rufy, contacting them on Twitter.
Yes, yeah. I mean, well, we tried a few things because Rufy, you know, at first some of the students were quite resistant, or Rufy would send, you know, emails or contact them online. It was a little bit of a battle at first to get them to engage with Rufy because they were kind of, it was this person trying to distract us from our assessment. Mm-hmm. But what was interesting, actually, which I didn't mention in the talk, was the game became Who is Rufy Franzen? That was never our intention. We had this wonderful narrative that we constructed, which is all to do with this really big story, but we didn't actually get that far into the game because with an ARG, it's essentially driven by the players. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't control it once you put it out there. So, yeah, we didn't need to go deeply into the plan narrative at all. You know, just the device of who is this person was enough, mm-hmm. to sustain their kind of interest throughout the module.
Yeah, one of the notes I took was subliminal.
Subliminal messages.
So, in the wrong hands...
Yeah.
It could be Michael Gove giving those messages. So
you mean like in the wrong hands of, say, a primary school teacher who has just a micro gesture on their face when they're confronted with a student that's being way divergent in terms of creativity? These kind of subliminal messages already exist in education all the way through. Yeah. Whether your behaviour is approved of or disapproved of, the entire system judges you from day one. So these subliminal messages exist. If you raise them to the conscious level and say, I'm going to enact upon this subliminal message, then at least it's consciously expressed. You're absolutely right. In the hands of an idiot, you're going to get idiocy.
Yeah, I'm sure I've given horrible subliminal messages to
absolutely
children throughout my life. Now I've just given up that line of inquiry. But there is an ethical dilemma to a lot of the things which you talked about, which was really fascinating. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think by the end of the process that you showed, the students themselves were vastly enthusiastic
Absolutely.
About the thing they'd gone through.
Yeah.
And the bit that struck me is that they then went through the whole process again themselves to follow. They sort of replayed the game.
Yeah.
I don't know, to understand it and see where you're going, which was really fascinating.
Yeah.
And when we heard from the students, and I'm hoping we're going to get this really good URL that's going to have all this stuff that we can put into the show notes here, because the videos and things that you showed were truly impressive, and we couldn't even begin to cover them in the short time we've got. But it just raises so many questions, and obviously raises questions with yourself about where do you go with this? How does it?
Well, actually, myself and Derek had a quick chat before, and Derek made an excellent point, which was about this whole idea of, you know, because there was a part in the game where some of the students got really scared, they became very scared, and it didn't last very long, it was a couple of days, but, you know, they did, and so they started to really think about this idea of kind of the pedagogy of deception, and learning through paranoia, and fear, you know, the role of fear in learning, and Derek said before, he said, well, you know, really, what's, you know, we scare students all the time. Assessment is scary. There's a certain element of threat to that. And that's such a good point, Derek. I mean, if you want to...
No, absolutely. I mean, a recent conference, the DRS Cumulus conference over in Oslo, there was a lot of talk about precisely in design. You have the crit. And you stand there in front of all your peers in front, and you get absolutely hammered. Mm-hmm. And that's the way that you learn. I mean, in my day, you know, I better not say it because I'm actually on campus in terms of where I learned. It was a hard thing, and it was the School of Hard Knocks, and you had to be brave enough, you had to actually face up to that kind of thing. Now,
but the kind of hard knocks that you took were condoned and designed by the owners of the university and all the rest of it,
the system
and society. Then
disagree with that, probably.
Okay, right. But the kind that you were maybe going out on a limb personally, I would have thought there, like somebody could have come down and done a ton of bricks on that at some point if they'd got caught. And that's where I'm wondering about the risk that you took.
I think there is obviously there's a risk there, and it was scary at one point, and I remember thinking, well, basically, I knew I was doing it for the right reasons. I knew no harm was going to come to anybody. Plus, we spent kind of 8 months leading up to this. I wasn't going to give up straight away, although if it had got bad, I would have stopped it. But and then, kind of selfishly as well, I remember thinking, well, you know what? If you're going to lose your job over something, this is a bloody good thing to lose your job over.
Absolutely.
You know, because at the end of the day, risk-taking in other sectors can often be really rewarded. Absolutely. But I think, you know, it was interesting, the conversations with the learners afterwards about the nature of risk, and they actually really appreciated the fact that I had taken that risk. And that's something that we don't really do with our learners. We talk about, you know, there's lots of people talk about risk in education, generally within the guise of entrepreneurship. But actually, risk isn't just about setting up a business.
Yeah.
You know, risk is about being open to challenges and open to opportunities and doing things that you wouldn't ordinarily do. Mm-hmm. And we need to be able to do that. And I think that's a problem with the education system. It, as I say, knocks it out of people.
Absolutely.
So by model, it's about modelling behaviours, isn't it?
Yes.
And just the way that we might model behaviours online with our learners, on Twitter, this is about modelling risk-taking. And I'm not saying they should all go out and take risks, but, you know, I think having those discussions with them is really, really valuable.
I think we could have a very long conversation about the thing you just started there, Derek. Maybe you can come back another time online or something to dig into that, because that's really interesting. Where do the drivers come, and where does the moral authority lie in education?
Absolutely.
It'd be interesting to dive into that. I'm very conscious that we're getting waved at from the door over there and to say we've only got a few minutes left. One of the themes of the conference has been working in the open, starting with the keynote today.
Yeah.
And you were very much working in the open in a covert way.
Yeah.
So there was this openness, because everything was online, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
The student, you weren't open with the students in the same way as some other people are talking. And that's really interesting. Right. Would you generally work in the open in your normal course?
Yeah, yeah. I'm 100% an open educator.
Right.
Absolutely. Before I started talking about that, I showed a quick video, a reflective sort of account that one of my students had done of, you know, his learning on his course. And what I try and do with our learners is to get them to work openly from sort of second year undergrad onwards, getting them to blog as much of their work. I try and get everyone to, when they're doing their final year projects, their dissertations, to have dissertation. Instead of having a logbook, put it online, get it blogged, because the benefits are huge. And we have students, you know, in second or third year being invited to do things like talk at industry events, because of their subject of expertise, and they're really good, and it's out there for people to find, you know, and they're on Twitter and stuff. That is invaluable, and to me it makes much more sense than a student doing an assignment which maybe goes to two people to mark and pass it back with a grade. It makes no sense whatsoever. So I think open educational practices are incredibly important, definitely. And there's an audience effect as well, I think, you know, when learners think, like, oh god, anyone can see this, they up their game.
And I think that we've been talking earlier today, that's primary school as well, that works. If primary school pupils publish things,
that's it,
they get feedback from all around the world. And we're, as adults, as an adult learner, we feel exactly the same way. And I'm presuming as an adult academic, if you publish openly, that you feel quite nice if another academic from Australia says, you know, good job.
I mean, it's great you bring that up, because there's some fantastic examples of primary school blogs. And it's brilliant. And how motivating is that for, you know, a 7 or 8 year old kid to have people from all over the world responding to what they've said? That is so powerful. So big supporter of the open education movement.
Is there anything else you want to get in the last minute? Because I can see, I'm getting the thumbs up from out the window.
We're getting pulled away, aren't we?
We're good to go. So can I just say thank you very much for your keynote this afternoon, which I really thoroughly enjoyed, and for chatting, spending the time, because you must be.
It's a pleasure talking to you both. It really is.
Derek, to yourself for having a talk, and I've got your Twitter address.
Give me a shout.
Interested. I think we've got a very interesting conversation.
It would be good. Absolutely.
Okay.
So, all right.
I think we might be back around 5 o'clock, folks, and I'll just say cheerio for now. Bye.